It was only a few days ago that former President Trump won enough delegates to clinch the Republican presidential nomination. Today, there's been a turn in the election interference case against him in Georgia. This morning, a judge ruled that Fulton County District Attorney Fonnie Willis can continue prosecuting Trump and others for conspiring to overturn Georgia's 2020 election results, but only if lead prosecutor Nathan Wade, with whom Willis had a romantic relationship, withdraws from the case.
That's one of several political things we're going to talk about now with our Friday Politics Roundtable. We have Shelby Talcott with us, politics reporter for Semaphore. Hi, Shelby.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And Tia Mitchell is with us, Washington correspondent for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Tia, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Tia, let's talk about Georgia. District Attorney Fonnie Willis, as Deepa just said, can continue in this case as long as the prosecutor she hired and had a personal relationship with leaves the team. Still, the judge had harsh words saying Willis had a tremendous lapse in judgment. How will this affect the case and or the politics surrounding it?
So it already has had real impact on the case, just logistically, this challenge of Fonnie Willis and her ability to remain as lead prosecutor has been a 2-month kind of sideshow of the larger case, which was already complicated and was going to take a lot of time. So there's that. But also, you asked about the politics. And at the end of the day, yes, Fonnie Willis will be allowed to remain on the case. Her office will be allowed to remain as long as they part ways with Nathan Wade. But it's been an embarrassment. There's been a lot of criticism of the district attorney. There's been a lot of criticism of her judgment and her decision making. And that's going to linger probably for the rest of her career.
Yeah. Shelby, Donald Trump hasn't been shy at all about going after judges, prosecutors. Should we assume he'll continue to, I guess, pile on against Fonnie Willis and complain the system is stacked against him?
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair to assume, because that's sort of part of Donald Trump's response to all of these, right? And not even just his response to legal issues, but in general, that seems to be his go-to when he doesn't like something or feels like he has been treated unfairly, or, you know, speaking just broadly politically, if he feels like somebody has been disloyal to him, that is his go-to in almost every aspect of his life. And certainly when it comes to these various legal issues he's had, his go-to is to go after the judge, go after the district attorneys, whatnot. And so I think it's fair to say that that is going to continue. And I know there's people in Trump's orbit who sort of wish that he would maybe take a quieter stance. It certainly does not always make their jobs easier. But at the end of the day, as you know, I've talked to many people close to Trump, his aides, and at the end of the day, they always note that, you know, you can tell Donald Trump what to do, or you could suggest things, but he is the ultimate decision maker in what he does.
Tia, this case, you described it a little bit. It is a sprawling, racketeering case. It's still awaiting a trial date. Are we likely, you think, to have a trial or a verdict before the election in November?
I think that's pretty unlikely. Again, they've already been slowed down by the concerns raised about Fonnie Willis. There's a chance that either the attorney for former President Trump or one of the attorneys for one of the other remaining co-defendants might appeal the judge's ruling today. That could slow things down even more. But if the case does move forward, it is just so sprawling. Just this past week, in addition to the ruling regarding Fonnie Willis, there was a separate ruling that threw out some of the charges against former President Trump and some of the co-defendants. So the district attorney has to decide if they're going to refile charges and things like that. There's just so many moving parts. And yes, Fonnie Willis had hoped to move quickly, but it just doesn't seem like that's going to be possible.
And adding on to that, just in case we're not all confused enough as it is, there's one other case against Trump that has been pushed back in the New York case, the hush money case about the adult film actress across in the days before the 2016 election. The district attorney is offering a delay of 30 days. Is it clear as far as the calendar that the cases against Trump are becoming less relevant between now and November, Shelby?
No, and I think what's interesting is as all of these cases, as this case potentially gets delayed, it affects all of the other cases as well, right? And Trump's team in the prosecutors seeking this potentially 30-day delay are asking for even more time. And this has been sort of Trump's team's main thing is in all of these cases to try to delay as much as possible, because as we've seen, that affects all of the other legal issues. And it also pushes things back to where we might not see these cases go to trial before the 2024 election, which is the ultimate goal for Trump's team.
Yeah. Let's turn to a speech about Israel that's created a firestorm in Washington, the speech by Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer. Schumer called for new elections to replace Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Let's take a listen.
Prime Minister Netanyahu has lost his way by allowing his political survival to take the precedence over the best interests of Israel.
Now, Tia, Schumer in his speech described himself as the highest-ranking Jewish elected official in America. Is it striking that this self-described, quote, guardian of Israel is saying this?
It's very striking. Number one, because Chuck Schumer has been such a champion of Israel throughout his long political career. And he's not just been called the highest-ranking Jewish official in America today. He's been talked about as the highest ranking Jewish official in American history. And so I think that did give him a unique perspective. And quite frankly, he was able to say things that perhaps a non-Jewish elected official wouldn't be able to say without even more controversy. And so I think that allowed his words to carry additional weight and additional consideration that, again, perhaps a non-Jewish elected official wouldn't be granted. But at the same time, it was still very controversial and, quite frankly, a little bit polarizing what he has proposed or what he has asserted.
Well, and to that point, Republicans jumped right in. Also, some Democrats. But Republican Senator Lindsey Graham said he was dumbfounded.
What he said today was earth-shatteringly bad. The majority leader of the United States Senate is calling on the people of Israel to overthrow their government.
I mean, Shelby, do you think that, you know, the Democratic leadership is hearing a message from a part of their base that is calling for more action on Gaza? Is a speech like this speaking to them, perhaps?
Yeah, I don't think we can underscore the importance of this speech, as you know, we were just saying about it, just in terms of who was giving the speech. But certainly it's become impossible, in my view, for Democratic leadership to ignore this faction, not just because of, you know, the growing protests we've seen on the ground, but also just, you know, the when you're looking at the 2024 election, there's this uncommitted vote that is a protest vote against Joe Biden and the White House for how they've been handling this situation. So all of those things are indicators that this is not just an issue that is affecting people right now, but that is threatening to affect the White House and the Democratic leadership heading into an election year. So certainly they're trying to figure out how to balance, you know, and almost it's almost impossible to balance this situation, but they are learning day in and day out that they are going to have to figure out a solution that makes this left-wing faction of the party a little bit happier than they have been in this.
Yeah. And Tia, just this question to you, does this moment change the potential U.S. position on Israel and Gaza, potentially change the politics of Israel this year?
Well, I don't think the speech itself changes the U.S. position. You know, the White House said Schumer did give them a heads up, and they said, you know, he has a right to speak his piece, but they did not co-sign or indicate any reaction to Schumer's speech. But I think just in a more general sense, I think, again, as we've said, the posture of the U.S. government, particularly as the White House is led by Democrats, it is changing towards Israel, because the people of America, particularly on the left, but I think there are a lot of people who are seeing the humanitarian crisis in Gaza and wondering why the U.S. would continue a policy that is seen as not taking that seriously, out of loyalty, kind of longstanding loyalty to Israel. So that is, I think there is a shift, but I don't think it's as partisan as perhaps some Republicans would like to make it. But, you know, that would only, we'll see how that plays out if perhaps Republicans retake the White House and then can decide how they're going to approach Israel in the war with Hamas.
And we want to sneak in one more little question, shifting gears here to Vice President Kamala Harris, thought to be the first vice president in U.S. history to visit a clinic that provides abortion services in Minnesota. She used the word abortion 19 times when she spoke. Biden avoided the word in his State of the Union speech last week. Just quickly, Tia, what's the election strategy here?
I think, number one, the election strategy was kind of to make up for Biden not saying the word abortion in his speech. But also, we know Democrats believe that when they put abortion and reproductive rights on the ballot, it helps them not just on that specific issue, but to help elect more Democrats. So we're going to hear that, I think, throughout this year.
That we've been talking to Tia Mitchell, Washington correspondent for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, and Shelby Talcott, politics reporter for Semaphore. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.